Welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar, broadcasting from my home studio. Last week, we began a conversation on this program about students and teachers and how they could return to the classroom safely this fall, especially at a time when COVID-19 is flaring up in some places. Yesterday, with a pediatrician and school nurse on the program, we continued to receive questions about schools. We received so many questions that we decided to bring back our guest from last week to discuss reopening plans. Joining us again today, John Callahan, Chief Advocacy Officer with the Pennsylvania School Boards Association. John, welcome back to the program.
Pleasure to be on.
Rich Askey, President of the Pennsylvania State Education Association. Rich, glad to have you on the program this morning.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
And also, we're joined today by Dr. Damaris Rao, Superintendent of the Lancaster City School Districts. Dr. Rao, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
If you have a question or comment, and this is your opportunity, we saved our questions we didn't get to last week, and we'll continue to ask questions on this program as well. 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at SmartTalkWITF. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Dr. Rao, I want to start with you. The Lancaster City School District, the school board, has adopted plans for this fall. From what I understand, you're looking at a hybrid system. Explain exactly what you'll be doing in your district.
So PDE directed us to develop a reopening school plan with as much face-to-face time between students and instructors as possible. We thought that a hybrid plan in which students would see their teachers for some parts of the week, and some parts of the week they would be doing work at home. So for our elementary students, most of them will come in, half of them will come in the morning for instruction, and then go home and use the afternoon to do projects and other work that are assigned. For our secondary schools, that is grade 6 through 12, students would be coming in either Monday, Tuesday, or Thursday, Friday. But the point of having a hybrid approach is to ensure that we can implement all of the mitigation efforts to keep our staff and our students safe. And that was really the impetus for doing a hybrid program. We knew we could not have 25 students in a class. That would not enable us to socially distance between staff and students, and so that's why we decided to go with that hybrid approach.
Okay, so you just mentioned the word impetus, and I'm going to ask a question that's similar to that. What do you think the biggest factor was in reaching that decision on a hybrid?
For us, the greatest factor was how do we provide face-to-face instruction, which we believe, and all the other experts are saying, that's the most important thing for kids. However, how do we provide that and keep our staff and our students safe? And so as we were developing different types of options, we said, well, if we have to provide 6 feet of social distancing, then we can absolutely not have all of our students in the class at the same time. And so we decided that the best way to do that was really to try to cut classes in half so that you would likely not have more than 13 to 14 students in a class at any one time. And, of course, when we're thinking about this, we're also looking at the members of staff in a room. So we have maximum capacity rates for each room, and so we know that if we have, let's say, 3 instructors in a room for any particular reason, then that comes out of the entire rate. So it might be 11 students and 3 adults. So we're being really, really cautious, and we're being really, really staying to the idea of we must provide social distance. According to the CDC and other guidance we have received, the social distancing and the mask wearing are the most important factors to keep people safe.
Dr. Rao, how flexible is this plan? Meaning, if there are far fewer cases, or if cases continue to spike, how flexible is this plan that you would move on to something else, either all in-person classes or all online classes? How flexible?
So we are prepared, actually, for either of those two other options. So, number one, the only way that we can close schools would be, of course, under the governor's directive. So our plan right now is face-to-face in the hybrid. If the cases continue to increase and the governor, along with the Department of Health, says we need to close schools, we are able to quickly go back into virtual approach. We have been fortunate to get support from community, donors, and of course, using our own fund balance, which is like our savings account, we are now prepared for every student to have a device of their own. We were not prepared to do that previously. We just didn't have a one-on-one when we first had the school closures in March. On the other hand, our board has decided that rather than set a date for bringing all students back, we really want to watch the data carefully before we go back to full-time, full-day for all students. And so we're leaving that to us to look at the data where we see consistent declines in COVID cases before we consider opening up school in that fashion. Again, for the safety of our students and staff.
Dr. Rao, Lancaster has a large percentage of its students where English is a second language. And also, like every school district, there are many special needs students as well. What do you have in place for those students where English is the second language, and also for the special needs children?
Well, thank you for asking that question, since I didn't talk about that. But what we have also determined as part of our hybrid plan is we have identified students who fall into certain categories who will be coming to school 4 days a week full time. Now, these are typically students who would be in small classes anyway. So, for example, if we have a class of students with significant special needs, typically they would have perhaps 10 students in a classroom. For students like that who are academically vulnerable, so that would include our students who are learning English as a second language, our students who might be medically fragile, our students who have disabilities that impact them significantly, we have prepared to bring them back full-time, meaning all day, 4 days a week. So, yes, we did think about that vulnerable population of students.
What about the students where English is the second language?
Same. So we have a what we call a newcomer center for students who are new to our country, who don't speak English. Those students will have the opportunity to come every single day, well, 4 days a week. We're using Wednesdays as an opportunity for our teachers to plan, since we're looking at both face-to-face instruction and online assignments. So we are providing that Wednesday as the gap day for teachers to have additional time for planning. But yes, so for newcomer students, those students will have that opportunity to come in 4 days a week, all day. Now, other students who are in a typical class, a regular class, who get additional supports, like students who receive English as a second language or students who may receive some type of additional special ed service, that would happen during their regular school time, whether they're in solely in the morning or whether they're in on Mondays and Tuesdays, we will be making those accommodations for those students. Mm-hmm.
Dr. Damaris Rao is superintendent of Lancaster City Schools. Dr. Rao, thank you very much.
Thank you. It was a pleasure to be here and have an opportunity to talk about our plan.
Thank you. Just another example of one of the larger school districts in central Pennsylvania and what they are doing. Rich Askey, I want to turn to you now. As I mentioned in the introduction, and I hope that most of our listeners today were able to tune in last Tuesday when Both you and John Callahan were on the program with other superintendents where we were talking about some of the options that school districts are looking at across the state. Since you were on the program just a couple days later, I know that PSEA sent a letter to Governor Wolf asking him to consider a hybrid program across the state. Why? What changed?
Well, what we actually asked for in the letter was that there be included in the plan the possibility of online learning, so that if we have to flip the switch, the data shows us that the rise in cases is going up and we need to close schools, that we have the online learning prep plan in place, so that there can be a continuity of education going on.
I misspoke, Rich. I knew that. I'm sorry. I said hybrid. I meant that you went online. But what changed, even in that short amount of time? More cases?
No. Well, yes. As you can see, if you look at the data, I mean, I don't know about everybody else, but I go to PA.gov every day and look at the cases because I know it affects my members across the state. And we saw the rise in cases. And we're not advocating that. What we're doing is saying, let's be ready for it if necessary. That's all we're asking for. Because, you know, back in March, our members did a simply amazing job flipping that switch. But some school districts have resources that made it easier. Some don't. Make sure in your plan that we can flip that switch and we can keep the teaching and learning of our kids moving.
So, John Callahan, anything different in the short amount of time since we spoke last week across the state?
Scott, if there's one thing I've learned in this entire situation is that things are changing daily in this whole pandemic situation, especially getting back to schools. It seems like the last time we talked was like a year ago almost, because things have happened. First off, you had updated guidance from the Department of Health and the Department of Education. And as you also know, you probably had some other discussions on the program about the restrictions on business and those guidance that came out as well that kind of led into the Department of Health saying, hey, let's have some further guidance for schools. And cases obviously have been going up, so you know things have been, you know, changing, and school districts are still in that mode. And this is part of our discussion last time. Still in that mode of planning. Some submitted their plans. Some are actually taking back their plans and changing them, modifying them. Lancaster was great to have on because, you know, you can see the planning that's going into it and the decision-making kind of tree of, well, we have so much space in our building, how do we kind of have the social distancing, what's the best way? Okay, well, we'll have to do, we'll have to kind of have a Monday-Tuesday schedule. You know, I think we're still in the midst of the planning, but we've just received even further guidance that talks about masks, that talks about social distancing, that talks about how you have to handle cleaning, you know. So I think, you know, we're still even getting information now on how to do this in the best way possible. So I got to tell you, school districts are still working really hard to make this the safest and do the best thing, but right by, I guess you could say, do the right thing for our students. And John, it is a little trying because the guidance is coming out this late. You know, and now we're still working on it, you know.
Well, speaking of that, from what you described, John, it sounds as if there could be changes right up until the last minute before school is scheduled to start. How is a parent to keep up with those changes and know what to expect?
Well, the good thing is, I mean, what I've been observing is a lot of our school districts are reaching out to parents, are reaching out to even sometimes the students and saying, here's where we're going. The other thing is these plans have to be approved by your board. So there's a lot of discussion, a lot of public interaction there. I've kind of watched on some Zoom calls, board meetings where you know, they're having 3-hour board meetings just to kind of go through the plan and receive the public input. And even during the board meeting, they're saying, oh, well, we won't approve it today. Let's go to the next one and we'll make adjustments. So there is a lot of input, a lot of discussions happening right now. But yeah, I mean, as a parent, my best advice is obviously everybody's worried here, is to kind of keep your ears open. Your school district is communicating out. You just got to, you know, keep open to those communication channels.
We're going to answer some questions here in just a moment. You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. We're talking about the opening of school, whether it's in person, a hybrid of online and in person, maybe staggered days of the week, or all online, and decisions that parents have to make, school boards have to make, teachers have to make. A lot of things to consider as school is supposed to start in the next month or so across Pennsylvania. Our guest today, John Callahan, Chief Advocacy Officer with the Pennsylvania School Boards Association, Rich Askey, President of the Pennsylvania State Education Association. If you have a question or comment, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at @SmartTalkWITF. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Now, gentlemen, I'm going to get to a few of the questions that we had last week that we didn't get to, and also update some of the questions we're getting today. Joel from York asked, he says, my wife is a teacher in the city of York. I want to know what is being done to protect both teachers and students. Are there additional allowances for sick days, additional funding for PPE and other protective measures? Start with you, Rich. What about that? I mean, it sounds as if, you know, his biggest concern is with his wife, who is a teacher in the city.
Well, and let me tell you, so is ours. Our focus right now is an organization, safety, their families, and our students. And he's asking some great questions. First of all, teachers are teachers and paraprofessionals working in the they fall under the CARES Act for additional sick days that they are able to use. And we are having our local leadership work closely with the district so that they have the kind of concerns that this gentleman brought forth, these valid concerns discussed at the local level, because they have to be included in the plan. And there has to be accommodations. We have members that have some medical situations where they're very high risk, or their spouse is very high risk, or their son or daughter. So we are encouraging those discussions to be held at the local level so appropriate accommodations can be made. For instance, Erie School District, I have to give my hat off to Erie School District, because in their plan, they are giving an option for people who work in the district to work online in order to teach online if they have serious concerns because of their medical history. These are the kind of things that need to be done for teachers, support staff, and yes, for students.
Greg from Shippensburg asks, and John, I think I'll direct this one to you. What are the current advantages of learning in the brick and mortar environment with all the possible challenges?
Yeah, and I think, you know, and you had some great presenters on yesterday, and I'm not, you know, I can't say I'm a doctor or a scientist or, you know, on this end, but there's been a lot of research on that in-person interaction between a teacher and the student, and the benefits of that, and also even the benefits of even though you're separate, having close discussions and having those face-to-face discussions and learning experiences. So I think, you know, as we look at all that research, people are kind of having that in their back pocket, I guess you could say, in the back of their mind, and saying, you know, knowing all that research, we've got to strive towards it because we know that that's what works, and we know that it's successful and it's good for children. So, but then you have that in the back of your mind, and you have in the forefront of your mind the health and safety. And how do we deal with that? And having those two collide, those two concepts, that's where we are right now, trying to make sure you have the health and safety, but also have the educational future of the students in mind. So that's why you're seeing, I mean, Lancaster is great, but you're seeing it all across the state where people are having those hybrid options, where people are going to have those Monday, Tuesdays, you know, maybe one half the school's in on Monday, the other half is on Tuesday, they're off on Wednesday. You even see these pods discussion where you have a cohort of classmates in one classroom, and the teachers kind of revolve around the classrooms in order to kind of keep things, I guess, because they keep the kids socially distanced the entire time, but not kind of have them traveling in the hallways. So you're seeing very different approaches across the state, but, yeah, all towards that goal, you're right, of trying to provide an educational experience for the students that actually is, as we know, is, like, critical, not only to our kids, but to our economy, our nation, and everything we are, almost, is built upon the foundation of education. So we've got to get back to it, you know?
Lisa from Phoenixville, who is a former school board president, wants to know about funding. She says, how are school districts going to fund all the precautions? I know you both have ideas on this. May not be easy solutions, but something you mentioned last week, Rich, had to do with the federal government. But let's talk about that, and I'll bring both of you in on this one. But where's the money coming from?
Well, needs to come from the federal. At this point, we're looking at probably a loss of $1 billion across the state in revenue for school districts. The state budget has certainly stepped up and given us solid funding similar to at the same rate as last year's for the entire year. But the state is also losing revenue. So I'm going to go back and say, you know, and it's in discussions now. The bill is being formulated, and we're very, very hopeful that the federal government is going to come through and give us the funding that is needed. Otherwise, you're going to see people furloughed. You're going to see the inability to do proper steps to in mitigation. So this is not an if or. We have to have the funding from the federal government.
Rich, let me ask you this, and I'm talking mostly about teachers. If a school district is online only, or maybe even hybrid, does it take the same level of staff?
Oh, yes, it does. You still have teachers. Actually, it's more work. If you look at it, the preparation that you have to do, we have teachers that are going out to make the individual connections. They have to, that normally if you're in a classroom, you walk around the room, you touch base with each child individually, but now they're going to have whole instruction, and then they're going to have to, then they have to make arrangements to speak to their children individually. You're going to need the same amount of staff, and you're still going to need the support staff there. The support staff did such an amazing job when schools were closed with making sure that children received lunch, that they received where there was problems with the internet, that they were receiving packets of learning. So, yes, you need the same staff in place.
John, what about funding?
Yeah, Scott, and we're obviously very worried about it. And I'm always careful when we talk about funding that, you know, people think we're talking about money and you know, it's all about the money. Well, obviously, it's all about funding the education. So we got to talk about the money. And we are worried, certainly, about that. Where does it come from? Right now, I mean, the state has done their job thus far. I think it's going to be very hard for the state to invest further dollars, the state government, that is, into education. We know that our local revenues are down because of various reasons. Like Rich had said, it's all about the federal government. They are debating it right now, and I don't know, you know, many of you read the paper and see the news. The discussions are happening right now in Washington, D.C. for another stimulus as part of a certain amount of money going towards education to take care of these extra expenses, like the technology, the computers, the PPE, all the safety stuff that, I mean, even just coming down to hand sanitizers and all the expense behind that, all of that has an expense, and we're hoping the federal government can jump in and I'll put a plug out there, and you know, if you're concerned about it, obviously reach out to your federal government leaders and ask them. I mean, we need funding and some help from the federal level to make a school year a success.
Here's another one from Ann. Says kids come to school sick all the time. Without rapid same-day testing, all the planning by educators in the world will fall apart. We must have rapid testing before reopening. Listen to the scientist. John, is testing at all an issue or something that will happen in schools this year?
Yeah, and in the guidance that's out there, testing, there hasn't been any guidance that says you should be doing testing at schools. In fact, there's been guidance saying that you have to go to the testing sites. That's all around. And you've kind of also heard about all the issues with testing across the state and the slowness there. So there is some worry about that. You need that same-day testing. And I think that's just that's a national worry even beyond education.
But it's not going to happen in school, though, is it? I mean, is there going to be testing in school?
No, there won't be testing at school. We're not built for that. And it's not really something that we can do, but when a student is sick or indicated to be sick, there's going to be specific procedures for that. Our schools are already prepping for that. In fact, a lot of them will actually probably have sick rooms, quote-unquote, on separate from healthy rooms, just like you go to your doctor in the nurse area. And I think, you know, I know that there's different procedures for how we're going to be dealing with potential sick children, you know, depending, you know, they could have COVID, yes, but they also could have just simply a cold. So how do you deal with that? So we're going to be kind of like the front line, I guess you could say, on that. And then second off is, you know, when that kid is determined to be sick, they have to go get a test, and what's the procedures from there? And each school district's working on those procedures right now.
Let's take a phone call from Kathy in Columbia. Kathy, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have a concern as a parent about the actual online learning. I felt that last year the program was not good at all. When I researched the program my school district bought, it received 1 star online. It did not seem like the teachers were involved at all. My son and his class had a 10-minute group virtual meeting per day with the teacher, who seemed disoriented and uninvolved and seemed very impersonal. And I'm concerned if we do online, even in some capacity, how is this being vetted? What processes are the school districts going through to buy a good program? I think a lot of people who don't have children in school think the teachers are doing the programs and doing the teaching. They're not. It's all a bought program, and it's not very good, and it's very impersonal and not tailored at all to individual students.
All right,
so my concern is that we don't go back to that this year.
Thank you very much for your call. I'll ask both of you that question, or let both of you respond. I should say, John, what about that?
Yeah, you know, that when we had to make that switch, and I think a lot of, you know, it's switching basically from being fully in school to fully online, there were a lot of struggles with that. I mean, I think we handled it pretty darn well, considering the circumstances, but certainly a lot of struggles. Now, over the summer, a lot of our school districts went back to the drawing board and started working on those online programs, working on online learning so that, you know, even if your school is open, you could still have an option to do online learning. And they are vastly different than what we were handling when the pandemic hit way back in March and we had to close schools. So
In what ways?
You know, I think a lot of those programs, you're right, were just, you know, 30 to 40 minutes, maybe an hour of personal instruction. You know, these new programs are more instruction, more personal interaction. Teachers from the schools involved now instead of just teachers that are outside of the school. So you'll see a variety of different tactics there, but what I've been told and what I've seen is those programs have become more robust since then, because people realize that, hey, we were in emergency mode then. Now we have time to prepare. Now we have time to get this right. And a lot of effort has gone into the online education side of things.
Rich, you agree? I mean, will this be more robust? Will teachers have more time to devote to students this time around?
Well, that's one of the reasons why we sent a letter to the governor, to make sure that there is plans for online learning. But I have to agree with John. He made some excellent points. And I also want to say that this was an individual experience, and not to belittle it, because it I'm sorry that the caller had experience. I know personally of many teachers across the state that work 24/7 to continue the education with their children, and some of them made up their own lessons and used programs like Schoolology and Google Classroom and everything, and did a lot of work on their own. They were not dependent on a canned program. So this one experience is unfortunate, but there were plenty of other experiences that were pretty good on the other side of the spectrum.
But the thing is, Rich, I mean, and we know, I sound like a constitutional scholar here, well, maybe not, but that all students are guaranteed a quality education. If there are 1, 2, 10, 30, 100 not getting the same level of education as the others, well, that's not equal.
Well, and just so you know, that's been a problem in public education for a little while when you look at differences in urban, rural, suburban. So this is a problem that we are concerned about. And so it is a matter of resources and making sure that those districts have the resources they need so that every child has the same equitable public education, as they should. I agree with you.
Well, I guess my point is that you're talking about a bigger issue that has existed for a long time here in Pennsylvania, but in some other states as well. But in this particular case, I mean, I understand, to be fair, understand that, you know, we're talking about unusual circumstances at this point. So just want to make that point. Let's go to the phone now. Lisa, who is in Phoenixville and is following closely. Lisa, you're on the air.
Yes. Hey, good morning, everyone. How are you?
Doing well.
Great.
Good. So I was actually calling to follow up on the funding question, because I had called last time and said there is a way to fund this, and it's relief from unfunded mandates. School districts are under unbearable funding issues, and if they can have relief, and the state legislature can do it pretty simply, the first and easiest one is transportation. When schools are back in, you know, there's a mandate they have to go 10 miles beyond their border. And we don't let public school kids do that, so why are we letting private school kids do that? So that's a debate that should be had around, you know, those parents pay taxes in the district, but they don't educate their children in the district. That's a personal choice. And the second and big thing we need to talk about is remodeling and retrofitting schools. A lot of people aren't talking about the air filtration and HVAC guidelines the CDC put out. And I think if you want kids back in schools, this needs to be the central debate and how we pay for it. There is a way to pay for it by when you go in and remodel, you can also retrofit to renewable energy. You can save school districts money to repay bond payments in the future. It's not ideal to take out debt, but it is the solution right now. And we can do this. We know we can. We've done it here in Phoenixville. We have two schools. We put geothermal. We save $70,000 a year every year. That's taxpayer money that we save. So that's my comment, and I'd love to discuss.
Lisa, thank you very much for your call. John, what about that?
Yeah, I think you labeled me the mandate,
mandate king
or something last time.
Yeah.
So, you know, there are lots of things that can be done on the mandate level. Many people, it's almost, if you're familiar with the tax code, it's, you know, 800 books. It's almost as if we have the same thing for public education. There are 800 guidelines. There are 8,000 guidelines on how you have to go about it, and really kind of, you know, restrictive in some levels, and actually increase costs. So quite simply, if we had a mandate waiver program that would allow us to, you know, a school district to recognize a cost center, say that we can do it more creatively, go to the Department of Ed, say we can do this more creatively, and simply do it. That would save significant dollars without actually having to, you know, increase taxes on the local level or anything of that sort. So that's
anything like that being considered in the legislature, even if it's temporary?
Yeah, well, we have a temporary waiver right now, which the problem with the temporary waiver is because you don't know when it's ending, you know, you can't really build in that to your budget. You can't really build in a temporary waiver into a cost savings. But we are working on a permanent mandate waiver program with a few senators and some legislators, and hopefully we can see that move along and get considered. So that would be absolutely a significant step forward for helping schools save some dollars in this crisis.
Lisa's other point about retrofitting while this pandemic is going on, she mentioned geothermal and what Phoenixville is saving.
Yeah, you know, those are some you know, pretty darn creative ideas. Some school districts are able to kind of handle the bond side of things and retrofit things to save energy. And you're seeing that in some areas. In other areas, quite frankly, there is a have and have nots on that one where it's harder to afford and be able to do. But there's definitely some creativity there in how to kind of handle your energy markets and how to handle your HVAC systems. And also, in the planning right now for many of the school districts, they have been addressing and really talking about the airflow. I think the last time we were on the program, Cumberland Valley was talking about even they have measurements on how much airflow they cycle their air through their buildings. And a lot of our school districts are like that. They have those measurements and work on them and work to improve them.
Are there schools across the state that have no air conditioning at all?
That is a great question, Scott. I don't know.
Yes. Do you know that?
Yes. Yes,
there you go, Rich.
That's for a fact. In fact, I just spoke with a member yesterday that said that none of the elementary schools in her district, except one, has air conditioning. You generally see it at the secondary levels and the middle school levels because that's where a lot of renovations have been done recently. But at the elementary level, there is a tendency to see more of no buildings without air conditioning.
How's that going to work? I mean, now granted, I'm hoping we don't have 10, 15 straight days of 90-degree temperatures like we do now. But, I mean, in a normal school year, it's just uncomfortable. But now when we're talking about airflow and how it can impact health, that could be a real problem.
Absolutely, it can be a real problem. And that is something that the local institution's going to have to be addressing, because they're going to have to make sure, you know, you have to have the windows open, you have to have airflow, maybe some outdoor classes going on. And simply, I mean, some of these schools beforehand, if it was just too hot, it was too hot, and they had to close down for the day.
Mm. Yeah, you're listening to Smart... Go ahead, John. Go ahead, John.
You're spot on with that. I mean, there are, you know, there's definitely a need for this kind of investment. There was a program that actually helps schools, but it doesn't have funding anymore, called PlanCon, and we can talk hours about that. But there's no investment in that. And schools are, you know, in their plans making adjustments for it, but it is difficult, especially in light of the fact that you not only have the safety, you have these safety plans. If you remember, there was guidance on keeping your windows closed, actually, and who you let into the building and that type of safety. That sometimes conflicts with what the CDC is saying, which is open up your windows and have outdoor classrooms. So we're also having those discussions.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Coming up on tomorrow's Smart Talk, 30th anniversary this year of the Americans with Disabilities Act. We're going to be talking with authors of a new book about the Pennhurst School and some of the things that happened at the Pennhurst School. It was a school that was designed for intellectually disabled students. And some of the abuses, some of the things, some of the conditions that the young, well, it wasn't just young people, adults as well, lived in, led directly to changes and the ADA in 1990. We'll be talking about that on tomorrow's program, so be sure to tune in. Today we're answering your questions about going back to school. John Callahan, Chief Advocacy Officer with the Pennsylvania School Board Association. Rich Askey, President of the Pennsylvania State Education Association. We're joined now by Adrian Allen, Head of School with Harrisburg Academy. Mr. Allen, welcome to the program. Apparently, Mr. Allen is not on the phone with us right now. We'll try to get him on the line here very soon. Let me go back to some of the questions that we had. Let's see. We had one here from last week that I wanted to be able to get to, and it had to do with mask wearing. You know, there are a lot of concerns about students having to wear masks. And there was a gentleman who asked about bullies. He says, my question is, how will the bully? There always are bullies out there who steal the vital required mask on the bus, in the locker room. How are they going to be dealt with? Taking a life-saving mask approaches an act requiring the intervention of the legal system. Are teachers and school administrators prepared to enforce and appropriately punish these acts, which are most often underreported? Well, John, what about that? I mean, it is something to have to be. It's one thing to require all students to wear a mask and have the students keep them on and wear them throughout the day, no matter what. But used to be that there will be the bully who will steal the lunch money. We know there's going to be bullies out there who are going to steal masks.
Yeah, and the bullying situation, I mean, obviously is always significant and something that we deal with school psychologists and teachers, and it's always, you know, we've been dealing with it for since I went to school and since you went to school, Scott, and probably even before that. So, you know, with masks, we have kind of a new iteration of challenges, challenges of teaching kids to keep them on and how you do that. And even some school districts are considering mask breaks, areas where you can go just by yourself and take it off for a few seconds kind of thing. And then you come kind of down to this question, and it is a challenge. It's going to be a challenge to really help students get through this and to stop those kind of things. And I think our administrators and teachers are prepared to stop those kind of things and say, hey, not appropriate, and to take action. And it's not going to be easy. I think this is a whole new challenge for us and a whole new challenge for everyone. In society, we seem to be having a hard time. So it's going to be a challenge in schools. And I think we're going to have struggles.
Adrian Allen, head of school with the Harrisburg Academy, is on the line with us now. Mr. Allen, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Understand that Harrisburg Academy has decided to go back to school in-person class 100% of the time. Tell us what your plans are.
Well, our plans are that we will actually offer a hybrid program. We will give parents the opportunity to either come back to school full-time or to go online and follow their classes directly. So our online program will actually be being in the class virtually. So, we've been setting up for this for about the last 5 months, and we were able to offer an online program pretty much from day one with actual teachers teaching and providing classes. So we feel that we have a hybrid option which we can offer. We feel we have an in-person option we can offer, and we are ready to be flexible and move back and forth between them if necessary.
Oh, I'm sorry, I misrepresented that. I guess the way it has been described is that, you know, that Harrisburg Academy is doing something unique. What is unique about what you are doing?
Well, I mean, in the sense of what's unique is we are giving you the opportunity to come in person, but you can also study remotely at home, but you're choosing between one or other of those. It's not going to be you come for 2 days and you go home. It is going to be 5 days a week. Either you can be 5 days a week in person in school, or you can be 5 days a week doing it remotely if you don't feel comfortable going to school.
So far, and how many students do you have, by the way?
314.
Have you had commitments from those parents yet of how many are coming back and, you know, how many are deciding to go online, or do they have some time to decide?
They still have time to decide, and they still have until August the 1st to commit fully to the school, because we extended our commitment date because parents were going, what's going to happen? Are you going to open? Are we going to be online? They wanted to know, so we gave them an extension. So we will finally know August the 1st how many people are committed. It looks like the majority of people want to come back in person, to be honest.
I also understand that Harrisburg Academy is offering mental health support. What will that look like?
Well, I mean, we run a strong advisory program traditionally, and we have a thing called Spartan Time, which is sort of similar in terms of discussions where students have the opportunity to voice concerns and so on. The concerns were different before the virus, but we will be using those times to help our students express their anxieties and discuss how they may resolve those. We also have our counselor designing a program to help them with issues like wearing their masks and so on. So, and we are working with our teachers and training our teachers, and the in-service time we will have before school opens in how to address those issues.
Mm-hmm. What makes a private school like yourself different than the public school? I mean, there are a lot of things aside from the pandemic. But during the pandemic, what sets you apart or makes you different?
Well, you know, one of the things we are is an IB school. So one of the things that we have been working on is having our students work independently a lot anyway, and doing their own research and being inquirers and so on. So when it came to doing the online learning, I think they were better prepared in some ways than maybe other students. We also, of course, had students with a one-to-one computer ability at home. We have small class sizes anyway, and I totally understood the conversation with it, where your other contributors were talking about the challenges of trying to find space for their students. It's easier for us because our classes are smaller anyway, and so it's much easier for us to implement things like wearing masks and having spacing and things like that. I think that those are the kinds of things that make it a lot easier for a private school to do this. And also, we have a bit more autonomy in that we can implement the procedures and the policies that we see as being appropriate much more quickly. You know, it's not like a whole group of schools trying to decide what's okay. It's literally our school going, this is what we're going to do. And we followed all the guidelines. In fact, we immediately set out to be as stiff as possible and follow all the guidelines. We had masks, we had testing, we had not testing in, you know, testing for temperatures. We had the social spacing already agreed, and I think that helped us too.
Harrisburg Academy Head of School Adrian Allen. Mr. Allen, thank you very much for being with us today.
My pleasure.
John and Rich, we only have about a minute or so left. I'm going to try to get at least one more question in, and this is one that I know a lot of people have. This listener says, I'm a private tutor. My students complain often they don't like to sit down all day at school. With the idea of having teachers rotate around classrooms, students were to be seated for a longer time. How would they get their childish energy out without being distracted? Rich, what about that? And I have to restrict you to 30 seconds or so.
Well, and there is going to have to be planning for that. That's a very good question. And there's going to have to be time in the school day, and that's when perhaps they can be go outside for a little while and do some exercise and things like that. But there's also things you can do with keeping the students in space, like having them stand. I taught elementary school. I'd take a break, like a brain break, I'd call it, and then I'd have my kids, like, stand up and just dance in place or do some follow the leader stuff in space. So there are things that can be done to help that.
we may be doing the hokey pokey a lot more than what we normally would do. John Callahan, Chief Advocacy Officer with the Pennsylvania School Board Association. Rich Askey, President of the Pennsylvania State Education Association. Obviously, this is an issue we'll continue to follow. Gentlemen, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thanks.
We'll talk to you tomorrow. Stay cool.